You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And this week's, well, last week we said we were going to start doing these Tim's Picks, and this is not a Tim's Pick, so consistency, folks. We'll do it one, next week we'll have another Tim's Picks.
Here's the one thing you can rest assured about the Cigar Nerds. We are going to be consistently inconsistent. Yeah. So, enjoy.
And the reason why this is not a Tim's Picks is because this is our first cigar someone has sent us to try out. These are the Fire and Rescue cigars from RealMenSmokeCigars.com, the provider of our badass nerd shirts.
Yay!
Yeah, they have two cigar companies. One is the Badge Cigars and Fire and Rescue Cigars. It's a cigar that they developed kind of to support your local first responders, your law enforcement, and your firefighters. So,
yeah, it's for a good cause, folks.
Yeah, so pretty much the cigars themselves are look to be the same. It's just different labeling depending on which one you want. You know, your cop cigars or your fireman cigars. And I am trying.
And for all you firefighters out there, if you're smoking these, please don't just immediately douse the cigar.
Yeah, that's
let
one thing
this
I like,
one burn.
I like, yeah, that's one thing it says
this
on
is one good fire
on their label as like let this fire burn. I know y'all like to put shit out, but no, this one you're cool. Let it burn. And then we've got two different kinds. I'm trying the Rig, which is Indonesian Sumatra wrapper. And it was rated an 89. What do you got there, Brad?
I'm actually smoking the Hydrant, which is a Brazilian Maduro wrapper with a Nicaraguan filler. And, I'm really digging this cigar. It's got some nice peppery taste here. I do have a beer over here to the other side of me. So, you know, the flavor profiles and everything are really balancing out. And this is turning into be a very delicious smoke.
Yeah, I'm impressed with these. These are some good cigars, and they're not like a novelty cigar. Like you'll see some like companies say, hey, we're gonna put our label on a cigar. No, these are actual from a Don Kiki is the master cigar blender who's been in the industry for over 30 years. So these are coming from a legitimate, well-respected cigar manufacturer.
You know, to touch on what you just talked about, you know, as far as the wrapper and everything, I mean, you know, the wrapper's superior. I don't see any huge tobacco veins or anything. You know, the smoke is burning very evenly. And, I mean, this is the quality of, you know, I mean, this smokes to me about like some Fuentes and stuff like that I've smoked. So,
this,
I mean,
this is the second one of these I've had. And I tried them a little early. When we first got them in the mail, of course, they're, you know, probably not the humidity level is not perfect. So now these have been in my humidor for about 2 weeks, you know, rehumidifying, and it's a real good smoke now. I'm enjoying it. The ash holds together well. The wrapper holds together well. I'm impressed with these smokes. And if you would like to get some of these
on
your own,
very easy draw to it as well. I mean, you know, it's just, it's very smooth, and then you get, you know, some of the peppery overtones from the filler there, and the sweetness of the Maduro wrapper. I mean, dude, I'd smoke one of these every day,
and you can order these from the company if you can't find them in your local cigar shop. For the Fire and Rescue cigars, it's firerescuecigars.com, and for the Badge cigars, it's thebadgecigars.com. Or there's links to this on the Real Men Smoke Cigars website. You can get to all that through.
And we can go ahead. Either. We can throw up a link just to make it convenient.
Yeah,
it'll be
in the show notes on our website. And we got one more announcement before we move on with the show. If you want to like drop some like ominous like dun da da dum music here, Brad? Some thunderclaps or some shit.
Thunderclaps.
Yeah, something to add.
So we
drama.
Should go with some AC/DC. You know.
Thunderstruck.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like thunderclaps.
Yeah.
You say thunderclaps, and, you know, I think we're about to, you know, freaking get down to some rap videos or something.
Something to add some drama to the announcement I'm about to make. Our next episode will be our first live show and meet and greet.
I just saw a big shimmering light. They say, you know, go toward the light. I'm going.
And where is the show going to be, Brad?
Where else is it going to be? I mean, the only spot that you can find the Cigar Nerds on a regular basis, at the cigar shop off of Setting Down Road. So
yeah, the cigar, it's actually called The Cigar Shop, incoming, where pretty much this podcast was born. We're going to record our first live show, and it's going to be our Christmas special. So by the time this goes up, all the details, the address and stuff will be on our Facebook page. It's going to be on December 20th. We're going to be there from like 4 till 8. So we're going to, you know, record the podcast and then hang out with all you folks that show up and have a cigar with us.
We're going to shake hands and kiss babies.
Talk some nerd stuff with us. So, you know, please come out, you know, support the show, hang out. There's a bar there. You can have a beer. Try one of these Beer 30 beers we talk about. Have some cigars, have some beers. There is a non-smoking like wine lounge for if people don't want to, you know, sit in the smoke with us. You can go in the wine lounge. So, you know, feel free to bring your wives and whatnots. So, yeah, girlfriends, mistresses, random strippers, whatever you happen to bring, it's all good.
Philippine hookers.
No. Hey, we may even get a live Tim's pick. Get him on the mic. He'll probably sneak out before then. He's like, freaking nerds.
No pipe smokers.
So yeah, we're really looking forward to that. So yeah, we're definitely sending out the invite, and like I said, all the details will be posted on our Facebook page. So definitely check that out, and we'll be right back with the main segment.
Stay tuned.
Five and he was six. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down. Seasons came and changed the time. When I grew up, I called him mine. He would always laugh and say, remember when we used to play? Bang, bang, I shot you down. Bang, bang, you hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, I used to shoot you down.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm Smoking Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Yeah, you probably already heard that, but you know, we'll say it again.
Yeah.
Make sure you're listening.
we need to brand ourselves. So yeah. From now on, every segment, we're going to introduce ourselves. That way you never forget who your cigar nerd buddies are.
Let's see if anybody can guess what we're talking about from our intro music there.
I don't know, but man, that song's been stuck in my head all day.
Yeah, damn, I'm going to be like singing that stuff all night. Well, we're talking about the movies of the man, the legend, Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah! Hey, he was born the same month I was. Really? Which is March, so he's a Pisces. We have the same sign, therefore, me and Tarantino, we pretty much share some kind of badass connection. So now I'm like going to be a protege of Tarantino. And we both like violence and non-linear storylines.
Yeah. That's one thing you definitely find if you watch a Quentin Tarantino movie, is his style is stuff is going to be like completely out of order. And pretty much every one of his movies, I think, except for Django, it really wasn't didn't do it that much in Django. But pretty much everything else is just you're confused the first time you watch it because nothing is in order.
I'm never confused. I always have it figured out. I just know there's going to be lots of violence at some point, and I just wait.
Yeah, that's the other thing about Quentin movies. You know you're going to get some bloody violence, and you're going to get some foul language, and it's just going to be weird, batshit out of order.
Yeah, man. I mean, speaking of the man, this guy has been all over the place. You know, not only the films that he's directed, but the films he's collaborated on and, you know, scripts that he's written and everything else. I mean, dude, it just seems like every year since the 1980s, this guy's had something going on that, you know, it's just
mind-boggling. I mean, he is really the godfather of independent filmmaking. I mean, without Tarantino, we probably wouldn't have Clerks or, you know, or any of these other cool indie films, because he's the one that made it, you know, popular.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, just I'm just going to throw it out there, you know, so far his films have, you know, generated 2 Academy Awards, 2 Golden Globe Awards, 2 BAFTA Awards.
BAFTA.
Yeah. BAFTA. What the hell is BAFTA?
I don't know what that translated into, but yeah, it's a big award.
It's probably something like action film, you know.
Badass film. Something, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and, you know, he's been nominated for an Emmy and a Grammy. So, you know, and he was named one of the most 100 most influential people in the world by Time Magazine in 2005.
What was that big word again?
Influential.
Ah, sweet.
Yeah, I can say it this time. You know, I'll go ahead and preface this, guys. We recorded Beer 30 earlier today, and I had a holiday party to go to, so all day has been like a Beer 30 segment. So if I slur a little bit, suck it up and deal with it.
I may be on my own tonight. Brad's slipping a little. so, you know, he always does his movies out of order, so we'll talk about them out of order. Let's jump to what is probably the biggest film that we all know and love is Pulp Fiction.
Do we all know and love it?
If you don't, get out of the nerd cave, right? If you haven't seen Pulp Fiction,
I mean, I'm saying I know and I love it. I'm just saying, if there's people out there that don't know it and love it, then they better figure out what the hell it is and they better love it. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction was just, I mean, that, like I said, that was probably the biggest independent movie to come out. It was like 94. It was his second.
I mean, it is definitely one of the biggest, you know, what I would consider cult films that, you know, and it doesn't even have to be in a nerdy circle or anything else like that. But you talk about Pulp Fiction, and just about everybody, if they haven't seen the movie, they've at least heard somebody talk about the movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many quotable lines from that. I mean, there's, I don't know how many times people quote, you know, some of Sam Jackson's lines or, yeah, hand me my wallet.
Yeah, which wallet is it? It's one that says bad motherfucker.
Exactly. I wonder how many people went out and bought those wallets.
Oh, I know I was one of them. In fact, that was one of the gifts from Rachel. There's a girlfriend reference. Shots. Everybody. Yeah.
Drink if you're playing the
everybody.
Yeah, I mean, Pulp Fiction was, you know, it was actually his first 2 big box office set, too. It made $107 million, and it was just such a different style.
I mean, I would just
style.
Like to have one of those 1 million.
Yeah.
You can take all 99 others, just give me one of them.
Got 99 problems and a million ain't one. But yeah, I mean, it was revolutionary for its time, too, because that whole, I mean, if you study film theory and stuff like that, you know, most movies have, like, your 3-act format. You know, pretty much every movie you see falls in that 3-act category. You know, you introduce your characters, you introduce the story, you introduce the problem, there's some kind of setback, and then the 3rd act, you know, our hero wraps everything up. But his is so out of order that it doesn't fit into any kind of established film style.
Yeah, you know, and you're talking about, you know, how much the film grossed. I didn't know this. Did you know Tarantino was actually approached by Hollywood and offered projects including, you know, Speed, Men in Black, and ended up turning it down to work on Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, I mean, he's always been like, wants to do his thing. He wants to be in control. I mean, that's, you know, he, as we see throughout his career too, he's like, you know, I want to make a kung fu movie, so he makes Kill Bill. Yeah, I want to make a western, so he makes Django.
And I mean, kind of speaking along that Western theme, I mean, we saw that in, you know, some of the writings that he helped with for the script from Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, it still kind of has that Western-esque, you know, feel. Hey, I'm inventing words and shit over here, all right? I don't know what you're doing, but Webster Dictionary would not be that thick if motherfuckers weren't out there inventing words.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why we're talking about Quentin this week is he recently announced that he's planning to retire after his next film, which will be another Western the Hateful Eight.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that happen. I mean, we've seen the same thing with Kevin Smith and stuff like that. We see where that's
dude's
going.
Dude's got, like, have five movies since he said he was going to retire.
People say they're going to retire just to make you go out and buy all their previous shit, and then they're going to produce more shit, so then you go and watch the new shit before they do go into retirement.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of you know, retirement... I mean, this movie was what brought John Travolta back. I mean, before that, you know, he had done some TV stuff and a few movies back in the day, but we hadn't really heard anything from him in a long time. And then when this movie came out, that's what, you know, kind of blew his career back up and made him a leading man in Hollywood again.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a revitalizing process, and I mean... Dude, this movie just has so much to offer. I mean, you get the very Quentin style, but the whole storyline and the character development and just the fucked up scenarios that the characters find themselves in.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is truly a movie. I mean, it's almost artistic the way it's done. I mean.
And the other thing about you'll see in just about every Quentin Tarantino movie is they all start... with a completely random scene. I mean, you can watch the first 20 minutes of every Quentin Tarantino movie and have no clue what the rest of the movie's about.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the movie starts out with, you know, Butch Coolidge, you know, the aging boxer.
No. It started with Tim Roth in the diner.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, my point here being is you've got all these random characters that... if you tried to do a movie about any single one of them, it would just make no sense. But you take all these random characters, and then throughout the course of the movie, they all tie in together into this great big picture. Like,
yeah,
it's...
because like I said, that whole opening segment of that movie is the guy and his girlfriend in the diner talking about, you know, how they should rob the
bank
diner.
And, yeah.
And like I said, it and then it jumps to... Vega or Vincent and Jules, you know, on their way to, we don't know what they're on their way to, but having a conversation about how weird stuff's in Amsterdam and quarter pounders are called royales with cheese. It's like, I mean, you don't know they're hitman. You don't know that they're on a mission. It's just that whole opening segment has, you know, no clue what the rest of the movie, if you saw just the first 30 minutes, you'd be like, I don't know what the rest of that movie would have been about.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And you see that in almost all his films.
Yeah, I mean, I can say that, you know, after surgeries and stuff like that, you know, being on some pain meds, trying to watch a film, if you fall asleep for 15 minutes, screw it. You better start back from square one.
It, I said Reservoir Dogs started off the same way. It starts off with a bunch of dudes in a diner fixing to go... I don't even know if they're talking about the robbery yet, but they're just kind of having breakfast and bullshitting. So, like I said, we'll talk about that more in a minute.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing you see with Quentin's films. I mean, it seems like in all of his films, you see little, you know, nuances from previous films and stuff. Like, oh, yeah, I can remember a very similar situation from this movie or that movie. And, you know, next thing you know, though, shit just gets really fucked up and each movie's more over the top than the next.
Yeah, yeah, you always see that same, you know, even though his style is jacked up, you always see that those same elements that that always show up. And this is probably the first big Samuel L. Jackson appearance, too. I mean, all the movies where he's been a badass and made a big speech and stuff, it started here in Pulp Fiction.
I think this is what, you know... probably not the most religious person in the world, but how many people are reading Ezekiel?
Yeah.
I mean, this probably put that Bible verse on the map for the masses.
And you'll know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
So, I mean, you know.
Say what again?
What, motherfucker?
I said all the movies he's done from this, where he is like just the badass guy, started with Pulp Fiction. I mean, he was nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for this role.
Yeah, I mean, dude, just this entire movie, man. I mean, there's just so many memorable moments too.
It was nominated for 7 Oscars and actually won for Best, I think, Screenplay or something like that. And I think it was even listed as like the top film. The number one film of the last 25 years was one of the accolades it got. So So I mean, this movie really jumped off a lot of careers.
Yeah, I mean, you had, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, you know, take a huge role. Uma Thurman, Bruce Willis. We all know how much of a badass that dude is.
Yeah, Bruce was already around,
even Harvey Keitel and
another guy who, like I said, Quentin likes to reuse a lot of his characters. Yeah, and
I gotta
Harvey
say, man, I really love the Quentin and Samuel L. Jackson mashups. It just seems like every film that Samuel L. Jackson is just on some next level-ish.
Yeah.
You know, it just...
And that's the thing about Quentin's writing style, too, is it's just, even though this is kind of a, I don't know how you describe, an action crime movie, the conversation is almost stuff that we would have if we were in the same situation.
Yeah, I mean, all the characters, I mean, they're sitting down there,
it's very
dialogue-driven. Real-world problems and having real-world dialogue and everything else. I mean, it's just like you and I sitting here podcasting, only, you know, we're not talking about robbing banks or, you know, how we're going to save this bitch that just OD'd on some shit.
That's another thing that oh, the first time I watched it, that scene with her OD'ing and him, you know, he's such a cool guy through the rest of the movie, and all of a sudden he is like, oh, I've done jack something up here, and
dude,
go into his buddy to get the adrenaline
does
shot.
Marcellus Wallace look like a bitch? All right, you probably don't want to cross that dude or his wife.
Oh,
even if she wants to go dancing, you probably just dance with your hands by your side or something.
And even the conversation they had while they're trying to resuscitate her is like, he's like, you know, you gotta, just gotta, yeah. He's like, you want me to stab her in the chest 3 times? Like, no, you just stab her once.
I mean, it just goes to show, you know, the panic and, you know, people trying to rationalize, you know, the situation and get their head around it and say, holy hell, you know, what do we do here? You know, I mean.
And that weird, like, dance scene with them and that weird restaurant where everything's themed, like, 50s style.
Yeah, well, I mean.
I was like, if that's a real restaurant, I want to go there, man, and sit in the.
Well, I think that's what Red Robin and some of these other places tried to do, but their food was so shitty that they couldn't afford to do the cool bar.
I just like the tables that look like cars. Yeah. I was like, that is awesome.
There's been some bars or somewhere that I've been into that had some of that kind of theme stuff where I've seen, like, serving trays that you could, like, lean up against that were, like, the front ends of old Fords and stuff that are pretty retro. And
I went to a bar one time that the bar was the front end of a fire truck.
That's pretty awesome.
I think it was called Fire It Up, too, was the name of the bar. It was weird. a lot of the imagery, too. I noticed in that scene where they're trying to resuscitate her from OD, and there's a board game laying there, and it's Sorry and Operation.
Yes.
I mean, you see these little things like kind of hidden in the background of a lot of these shots that you know it has to be totally intentional, but you kind of miss it the first time until you've watched it a time or two and be like, oh, that's
well, I mean, that's the thing, you know, about, you know, Tarantino films in general is you watch it one time and you have appreciation, but I seem to appreciate his films the more times I watch them. I mean, Pulp Fiction being one of those that I could probably watch. I mean, usually there's not a 2 month period that goes by that I don't go back and rewatch Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
and it seems like every time I watch it, you know, I pretty much have the storyline down pat, but I'm looking for things going on in the background and, you know, the different sets and props and everything like that, and it's just awesome to every time I kind of pick up on something new.
Yeah, and to go back to what you're saying, what does Marcellus Wallace look like scene? I mean, that opening scene was just so badass, them going in there to retrieve, and the random conversation they're having before, you know, these guys are going there to kill some people, and they're having a discussion over whether a foot massage is close to sex. it's just so off, and then they go in there and kill those guys looking for Marcellus Wallace's case. Which we never see what's in that case. It kind of glows gold when it opens, and everyone gets these, like, oh my god, looks when they see it. And I've seen so many theories online of, like, what that is in the case.
Gold bars.
One of the most, the weirdest ones I've heard is it's Marcellus Wallace's soul. Because one of the theories look is, like, you don't even see his face until halfway through the movie. You always see the back of his head, and there's a Band-Aid on it. And people are like, that's where his soul was removed. Yeah, I've heard gold bars.
No, it's probably like me, you know, this morning, like, oh, I got to get ready. Let me shave my head and nick yourself, and it's all over. I mean, yeah, I can't tell you how many shirts I've ruined that way.
Yeah, I've heard the theory of gold bars. I've heard the theory of the Constitution at one point. But yeah, the fact that it's Marcellus's soul is probably the most amusing one I've come across.
Maybe it's a Golden Globe.
That's where the Golden Globe Award was. Yeah. It was stashed in the suitcase all along.
It was a box of Fuentes. Like, oh shit, some Opus X, son. talking about Marcellus Wallace, that's the first real movie I think Ving Rhames was in. I mean, now he's been in a lot of stuff. That Mission Impossible movies, and he's been in a bunch of stuff since then, but I think that's the first time I remember seeing him in any roles.
I think I give you that one. I can't recall any time I've seen him before.
Don't even see his face until, like I said, halfway through the movie when Bruce Willis hits him with a car and the fight ensues.
So, you know, what about, you know, the whole thing about Big Kahuna Burgers and things of that nature? Like, you see a lot of that stuff in a lot of his other films and things,
too. Yeah, I was just noticing that the other day. I was watching, it might have been Jackie Brown, and there's a Big Kahuna Burger.
Yeah.
Thing. It's those little things that are...
I mean, just, you know, little things that you pick up, you know, just from the other films that carry over and things that... Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I like, is he tends to keep a lot of the same actors and actresses and, you know, a lot of the same carryover. I mean, you kind of see that same thing with Clerks.
Yeah. I think my favorite scene, too, is Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction doing the whole speech to baby Bruce Willis about his father's watch. Yeah. It's like, and your father hit this watch in his ass.
I mean, I don't think there's any way you can politely describe to a kid that, you know, your father had to keister stash.
Yeah.
And that's probably the only time on the podcast I'll ever be able to use that phrase.
Unless you bring us back some Cubans from your next vacation.
No, this is just coming back with no labels, all right?
What, you're going to keister stash a box of Cubans?
I mean, are you offering to smoke a cigar fresh out of my asshole?
I mean, if it's
just
in a case.
Just ask yourself that.
If it's in a case.
You didn't say anything about a cased cigar.
Yeah, yeah, if it's, you know, Maduro Brown for other reasons, I'm not smoking that. But yeah, that whole conversation is just him talking to a little kid.
I'm sorry, man, the field was just fertilized.
It went, and also, speaking of keister stashing, the bring out the gimp scene too.
Yes.
Oh, because I mean, our parents and stuff have Deliverance, and we have Pulp Fiction is the modern dude getting raped scene movie people will talk about. Because that whole thing when Bruce Willis goes to leave, and he's just kind of like, this guy just tried to kill me, but I can't leave him to a fate worse than death. I've got to go back and save him. And he like starts looking for weapons. He's like, here's a hammer. No, here's a baseball bat. Ooh, a chainsaw. And then finally sees the samurai sword and is like, all right.
Yeah,
I'm
now we're talking. Yeah.
Around these guys. And then you get that great speech by Marcellus Wallace. He's like, you know, I'm about to get medieval on his ass. I mean, that movie just has so many great lines and great... And the freaking Harvey Keitel, which we'll talk about, you know, his appearance in Reservoir Dogs here in a minute. Him is the cleaner in that whole ending scene with him and Tarantino after they shot Marvin in the face and his head exploded all over the Nova.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know, man. I mean, we're just talking about this, and I'm almost having nostalgia just going back and, you know, re-picturing all the different, you know, situations and, you know, just...
I remember when this came out on VHS. I actually had just got one of the first four-head VCRs you could play stuff in slow-mo, and I was trying to watch that scene, me and my buddy Mike, frame by frame, to see Marvin's head explode.
Well,
in slow motion.
What about the part where Marcellus gets Maynard shotgun and shoots Zed in the groin?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh.
Like,
you hear me, hillbilly? About to get medieval on your ass.
I don't know. I don't ever want to be shot in the groin. It's all bad. Zed's dead. You know, directly from, you know, the whole gimp situation back to, you know, freaking, you know, Vincent and Jules for the whole Bonnie situation where, you know, they're back at the diner and everything else. And then,
Yeah, that whole speech where he's like talking to Tim Roth, where he's, you know, he's like, you know, when I used to say my speech, that meant, yeah, you know, your ass was dead. But now it's like I'm thinking I should help protect you and so like that. You know, he's all, because I want to see that, because he's talking about, you know, at the end of it that he's just going to quit and he's going to go off and wander the earth like Cain and Kung Fu. I want to see that movie of Samuel Jackson, Jules, his adventures as he's roaming the earth, getting into adventures. Quentin needs to make that movie. Like Pulp Fiction 2, Jules's
the journey. Jules Verne Chronicle.
Yeah. Oh, let's jump back in time like a Quentin movie and talk about his first big film, which was Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, your thoughts on the movie here? I mean, this is probably one of the only bank heist movies I can talk about where you don't see anything to do with the bank heist, really.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, and that's so shocking about that movie. It starts off with that generic scene of them sitting at a diner, and then immediately jumps to Harvey Keitel and Tim Roth's
character. Speaking of diners, we've seen a recurring theme here, folks.
And him, like, all just bleeding out in the back seat of, you know, after this aftermath of this robbery that's gone wrong. I mean, it's just such a complete jump. And the fact that the interior of the car is white, too, just makes it even worse that it's freaking blood-covered everywhere. But, yeah, it just kicks you out of nowhere because you're like, ah, these guys, you know, having dinner and stuff. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, the dude's holding his guts in.
Yeah. And from there, it's kind of all bad. So. Yeah.
And that movie, like, jumps back and forth. You never see the actual robbery. You see them hanging out beforehand and then the aftermath of it and then flashbacks of each of the individual characters setting up the robbery.
One of the crazy things, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that the heist goes haywire because, you know...
Why do I gotta be Mr. Pink?
Yeah. You know, a freaking dude goes to carjack the lady and she ends up pulling out a 38 and, you know, shoots him in the gut and everything. And that's really what sets the movie in motion, because once he gets shot, it's kind of like, you know, everything else. What the hell do we do with this guy? How do we keep him from dying? We can't take him to a hospital, so let's get him back to the safe house. And then, you know, shit just continually seems to go downhill from there.
Yeah, this was listed as the greatest independent film of all time. And Quentin Tarantino is in it briefly. I mean, you see him in that diner scene, and you see him in some of the flashbacks as Mr. Brown, but then his character supposedly got killed during that robbery, so you never see him for the rest of the movie except for in the flashback scenes.
Yeah, I mean, it's so crazy. Just, I mean, I like the little cameos and stuff like that Quentin does. I mean, you know, dude, freaking thing.
And the like
$2 million in gross and credits and everything else. I mean,
yeah, like I said, made like around $2.8 million. Was it Michael Madsen as Mr. Blonde? He's just such a psycho in this movie. I mean, when he shows up and starts like, they all assume somebody ratted them out, and you know, they captured this. He kidnaps a cop and is like torturing this dude to find out who ratted them out.
And it turns out the dude that got shot, you know, originally from the carjacking is an undercover cop and ends up, you know, putting, you know, a couple of bad guys down. But, I mean, you almost see, I mean, that almost had a hostile feel to me in that scene, watching the dude freaking get, you know, torch his ear, you know.
Yeah, he's almost not even asked him questions. He's kind of doing it for the fun of it.
Yeah.
And the whole scene, when they start off in the safe house, you really don't know where they're at. You don't see the whole room, and then as stuff starts getting worse, you start seeing more and more of the room they're in, and it's a warehouse for a funeral supply. So there's like a hearse and coffins and stuff in there. It's just kind of like foreshadowing, like, dude, nobody's getting out of this alive.
Yeah. I mean, it is just so crazy. And there's, you know, a couple of different, you know, spoofs in here. I don't know, just some of my research that during the standoff between White and Pink, the gun in Mr. White Hand actually switches shots from his left to his right. So, you know, it's like, uh-oh, we kind of reverse the camera angles and stuff.
Mr. Pink, Steve Buscemi, he's the only one that actually makes it out alive.
Well, you know, and it's kind of funny. And, you know,
friggin' Steve Buscemi cannot die.
When they're in the restaurant and he's giving the speech about not tipping, he mentions that he worked at a place with minimum wage. I'm wondering if that's a reference to the actor or the waiter.
Yeah, because he was a waiter in Pulp Fiction.
Where Mia and Vincent, you know, went to. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like, it's such a small world in Quentin movies. I mean,
I forget about him being doing that in Pulp Fiction. And the whole thing with Harvey Keitel ends up defending the kid that turns out to be the rat. It ends up killing everybody. And when he finally gets like, I was the rat, I defended you and killed my friends for you, and they were right. You were the one who screwed us all over. I mean, that was just like a powerful scene.
Dude, that's almost, I feel like that would be the ending if we ever get around to playing the game Resistance.
That's one thing, too.
Trust nobody.
Yeah. All of Quentin's movies, too, they have this, even though they take place in modern times other than Inglourious Basterds and Django, they all feel this, have this 70s feel to them. They feel like a freaking, especially like with Quentin's soundtracks and stuff he puts in these movies. You always assume you're watching some kind of 70s film.
Yeah, I mean the films have some sort of nostalgia behind them that, like you said, you always feel like you're kind of in a different decade. But I think it works to his advantage because times move a little bit slow. It's not as chaotic, so he can build up and switch to different scenes where more so modern times it'd be a little bit more difficult, I think, to pull some of those stunts off.
Yeah. And speaking of 70s looking films, Jackie Brown came after. I mean, that really, I mean, even though it's set in the modern era, but it looks like a movie from the 70s.
I mean, I'll go ahead and say it. Freaking Samuel in that movie just looked straight up 70s porn star.
Yeah. And Robert De Niro is his right hand man. Yeah, because they even drive like old cars and stuff, so it really looks like it should have been the 70s and all the, and this is like, that's one thing I've seen about Quentin movies. He's like, I want to make my version of a kung fu movie. I want to make my version of a western, and this was his version of the old 70s black exploitation films. And even stars Pam Grier, which starred in a lot of those older movies. It's
kind of bringing her back. And Foxy Brown.
Yeah. Jackie Brown. that one just turns into a straight up Ocean's 11 crime drama.
Yeah, I mean, this was one movie that, Greer and Foster, neither really performed any of the leading roles in many years. And, this was a movie that revitalized both of their careers.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff since then. And his character is just the bondsman who bonds her out of jail and kind of falls in love with her, and she gets him to help her out in this scam that she's come up with to steal all of Sam's money.
Yeah, I mean, basically, she was a flight attendant smuggling money in and out of Mexico, so
and Sam she decides
there's a hell of a lot more money in Mexico that I need to get here, and I'm gonna fuck this guy out of it.
Yeah.
Let's rock and roll.
And she's
crazy because she plays everybody in that movie.
She plays the cop. She plays Sam and his crew. Yeah, and he's like this weird gun runner or something. I love it, like that first scene with him and De Niro, and he's like showing him these like gun porn videos pretty much of girls shooting machine guns.
Whatever, dude. I think you try to get me to watch at least 17 of those every time we hang out.
Hey, man, you fall down some YouTube hole, would you find weird shit? I just love there's one where the girl's shooting like an AK-47 and Sam goes into this whole thing about AK-47s. He's like, when you absolutely have to kill everybody in the room, except no substitutes.
And truer words from never spoken.
And Fonda as his stoner surfer chick girlfriend.
Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, she's just weird as hell. Her and De Niro smoked so much weed in that movie.
I mean, I'm pretty sure there was about a 7 or 8 minute stint where all they did was fucking smoke weed.
Yeah. and we briefly see Chris Tucker as one of his dealers or whatever that gets locked up. And, Sam bonds him out just so he can kill him. This is so gangster.
Oh, yeah, and then you've got Michael Keaton playing the ATF agent. It's that movie's just so awesome, though. I mean, and that's the type of stuff that Quentin, in his film writing and everything else, I mean, to have one, centralized character with all the supporting characters and everything else, be able to pull this film off and tie everything together and... you know, in the end, make it all make sense. It, I mean, just goes to show how phenomenal Quentin is with his writing style. I mean,
and the, was it the, I'm having a brain fart here. But yeah, the, whatchamacallit, with, the scene, like, we don't really get that whole disconjoined timeline like we have in other movies, but you still get a little bit of that. When they actually get to the actual crime itself, you get to see it from different, you know, well, different characters' point of views.
You know, it from all the multiple perspectives, and, you know, we had some more modern movies come out that, you know, were that kind of the same way where...
Kind of reminds me of that movie. You ever seen Go?
I don't know if I saw that one or not.
It's a weird movie, and it's takes place over the course of a single night, but the movie keeps resetting, and it shows that night from each character's point of view. Like each of them, some of them, it's the storylines are all interconnected, but you know they go through this one, they follow one character all the way through to the end, and then they reset to the beginning and follow another character through all the way through the end.
So it's cool to see how people's mentality, their perceptions, and everything else influence. You know.
Yeah, that's another one for the watch list, because yeah, that was an interesting movie. But yeah, and then the when De Niro finally shoots the surfer girl in the mall, that is hysterical. Anybody who's ever been nagged,
poor Melanie.
Yeah, anybody who's ever been nagged by their girlfriends or wives at the mall, that's like everyone's.
What?
Like,
did you lose the car?
Yeah,
lose car keys.
Yeah,
can't find the car, can you?
She's keep making fun of, making fun of, and then finally he just turns around, and double taps her in the parking lot. I mean, anyone who's ever been nagged, and it's like this is what everyone has thought of doing in their head and have never done.
So yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, just having Jackie double cross everyone to keep, you know, the half mil to herself, and then you know ends up freaking recruiting the bondsman.
I mean, she tells Sam she's screwing over the cop. She tells the cop she's screwing over Sam. And really, she screws over everybody.
Well, I don't know. I mean, she did offer the bondsman there toward the end of the movie, you know, the opportunity to flee the country with her and stuff that.
She,
but
you really don't know if she's just using him, but, yeah. I don't know.
She
ends up kind of like, you know, actually liking the guy and stuff.
I mean, I did sense, you know, some connection between the two characters. Yeah. I mean, you know, there was definitely some jungle fever going on.
Jungle fever.
I mean, we're talking about the 70s and everything else. I mean, just got to throw it out there.
Well, that's the thing too. Like I said, Quentin has gotten a lot of flack for his you know, using the N-word and all this other stuff in his movies So you know that's going to come in pretty much any Quentin Tarantino movie.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. You know, he's fallen under harsh, you know, I mean, people have come out and criticized him for it and everything else. But, I mean, you kind of saw that with Django, you know, listening to, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, you know, say, hey, you know what? This is in the script. This is the type of movie. This is the era and everything else.
I love an interview.
Hey, if I'm going to say it and I'm going to go through with this stuff, then guess what? All of you are too.
Yeah. I love that interview he did with a reporter was trying to ask him about the use of the N-word in Django. And he's like, unless you actually say it, I'm not going to answer your question. He's like, come on, man, say it. Say it. You want me to talk about it? You say it. It's just, makes this uptight, like a reporter is completely uncomfortable. It's hilarious. But Quentin said himself, he's like, I write characters as these are how these characters would talk, this, you know, in their environment. You know, I'm not going to be untrue to that and say I can't write.
Yeah,
this,
I mean, if you're the strong about black character from Compton, you know, I'm white, then that character is going to act like he's out of Compton. If you're, you know, talking about somebody that's, you know, some kind of ritzy fartsy type person, then that's the type of character that you know he's going to write.
You know, if Spike Lee can use it, yeah, you know, I can use it too because I'm writing these, you know, these characters. It's how they, you know, they would talk, and he gets flack for it, but he always, you know, backs it up. And he's even attempted to do comedy. Have you seen Four Rooms?
I have not seen Four Rooms.
I watched that one recently. I had never seen it until we started doing the research on this, but it's a weird movie because it's Tim Roth from Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction is the main character, and he plays a bellhop at this like Hollywood hotel. And the movie has four different directors. There's like four rooms of weird people he has to deal with, and each room is directed by a different director. So there's a one of them's done by Robert Rodriguez and has Antonio Banderas in it, and it's weird as hell. But then Quentin does directed one of the segments called The Man from Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
It's like him, Bruce Willis, and some other guy, and they're these drunk Hollywood producers or directors or something, and they had this bet going that's like they seen a bet in some movie. I can't remember the movie that they had seen it in where this guy made a bet to chop his finger off if he couldn't light his lighter so many times. And they're like, we're going to recreate that. And we're all drunk, so we don't want to puss out on the bet. So you've got to cut the dude's finger off if he loses the bet. It's just so bizarre.
So unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's basically Quentin playing Quentin. But it's pretty funny, but it's just weird seeing that whole... you can definitely tell the segment that's directed by Tarantino, you know, even though he's in it. It's definitely that weird style of of Tarantino's.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say. I would say unique.
Yeah. Eccentric.
There we go.
Yeah.
Look at you using big words now.
Oh, yeah. And, well, he's also tried to do horror, too, with Death Proof, part of the Grindhouse double feature.
Yeah. I wish there would be like a Death Proof 2 or something else, man.
Yeah. 'Cause,
dude, the whole Grindhouse setup and everything, I mean, I don't know if it was just the whole theatrical experiences with, you know, the fake trailers and everything, but, dude, that was a very fun and entertaining time at a movie theater.
Yeah, I mean it didn't
get
a whole
moments
lot of...
that I recall, you know, being that way.
I mean, yeah, it's just, I mean, there's a lot of extra stuff added to the video release, but seeing that original version in the theaters with... Yeah, it didn't stay in theaters long because it was so huge. I mean, it just took up too much time because it was like a four hour movie.
I want to hear it. How much time did Lord of the Rings get?
Yeah, I still haven't watched that. I don't want to see a 3 hour movie about a bunch of dudes walking.
I can sum it up for you in 30 seconds. That's for the video podcast. Yeah. And I think Clerks 2 may have beat us to the punch.
Yeah, but yeah, that movie Death Proof. I mean, that's the most interesting serial killer movie I've seen. I've never seen anyone use a car as his method of killing people.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy to see Kurt Russell, you know, as the stuntman.
Stuntman Mike.
Just sits there and just stages a car accident using his Death Proof stunt car.
Which is a 1971 SS Chevy Nova.
Which I think you may have the bumper to. Dash.
No, that was a Chevelle. Oh, but no, well, I want close. That car so bad. If I ever get a hold of a 71 Nova, I'm going to paint it just like that car in Death Proof. Black with the skull and crossbones. I'm even going to get the little weird duck... duck hood ornament. That's another one too. That movie, like I said, you watch the beginning of it, you have no idea what that movie's about. I mean, it's him hanging out in a bar talking to these girls, and then it turns out he's like some weird stuntman serial killer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, you're looking here, and I mean, this whole movie, I mean, the plot's really divided up into, you know, part one and part two. So,
yeah.
I mean, really, and you're only
how many times this guy has pulled this off? Because I mean, he
previously.
Makes it look like an accident, and he picks out these young drunk girls and runs them off the road. Our man makes it like it's their fault. So yeah, it's the weirdest concept. But then the second part of it, which has Rosario Dawson and Zoe Bell. I mean, y'all may not know that name, but believe me, she's been in just about every movie you've seen because she is like one of the biggest stunt women in Hollywood right now, and she actually gets to play herself in this movie. You get to see her as her in front of the camera instead of dressed up like Uma Thurman. Because she was an Uma Thurman stunt double in Kill Bill.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. But yeah, that, stuntman Mike picks out what he thinks is a new group of young girls to kill. Well, they turn out to be stunt women filming a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the whole, you know, concept of the car is awesome. You know, that, oh yeah, the car is death proof, but it's only to the driver. And since I'm driving, yeah, you're going to die because you get no safety restraints or anything.
Oh yeah, when he has the girl in the car with him and he's just taking these like turns and stuff and beating her around the inside of the car. It's,
you know, basically,
insane.
You know, here, we're just going to stop suddenly and, oh, yeah, there went your skull into the dashboard.
And that scene, too, when he runs over the first girls, I mean, it's just so... They could use that in, like, the driver's ed
oh, yeah, when they're
videos.
In the freaking... what was it? Some kind of Honda or something. Yeah, like so a small little hatchback.
Yeah, one girl's leg gets like chopped off and goes flying down the road. It's just bloody as hell.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a great cover up too to why the, you know, first girl died. So, I mean, you just go ahead and take out all witnesses and.
Oh, yeah. And that second scene too with you know, Kurt Russell is upgraded to a 69 Charger now, you know, the black version of the General Lee, and the stunt girls, they're like, we want to go take a ride in a 69 Challenger, like the movie Vanishing Point, and it just turns into this whole like kung fu fight with cars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, it is funny, you know.
There's not even any, much dialogue in that second half of the movie. It's just the
it's basically
cars.
Just car on car, you know, smash crash, and
and then they just beat the shit out of Kurt Russell.
Yeah, I gotta say that was probably, I mean, toward the end of that movie, I mean, you're ready for Kurt to die, and I mean that ending was just so fitting.
Yeah, this girl power movie of him beating his ass. But yeah, like, you know, like we said, Zoe Bell got to play Uma Thurman's stunt double in Kill Bill. So let's talk about Quentin's version of a kung fu movie, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of Volume 1 and 2, I mean, this is one of the few movies that I'll say probably the sequel I enjoyed more than the, you know, first movie, so... Yeah, I don't know. Both are good movies, but there was just something about the second one that stood out more to me.
Yeah, I mean, the second one's more like a kung fu movie. I mean, especially with the scenes where she goes to the master and learns kung fu, and Bill sitting there playing his flute just like Kwai Chai Kane and kung fu. I was like, that is just awesome. Let's go talk about the first one for a little bit, too. That's another one that was kind of just weirdly out of order. Because doesn't it start with because it's been a while since I've seen it, with like her killing Vivica A. Fox, and it kind of jumps back to the whole hospital thing. And
yeah, I mean, it really starts out with, you know, the bride being wounded in the church, and... you know, after she was attacked by the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad. And, dude, that's just a badass name for any squad.
Assassination?
Assassination. And, you know, she tells her leader, Bill, that she's carrying a baby, and he shoots her. And, you know, 4 years later, basically, you know, she goes into the home of Vernetta and, you know, lets her know she's going to kill her. And then both women's are, you know, they're both members of the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad.
Yeah,
and
you think it's like this little, like, you know, soccer mom set up, and then, like, this badass fight scene breaks out in the kitchen. Yeah.
And, I mean, jeez. that is probably one of the most intense knife fights, but it is also, I mean, it just goes to show you the quality and, you know, the... I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. You go into somebody's house, and then you agree that, hey, we're going to go ahead and fight to the death using our knives, and, you know,
and then
let that be that.
Yeah, rolling up in her pussy wagon. A truck was badass. And then the kung fu fight with the sword fight and with the crazy 88. That scene, too, was and that definitely looked like an old-style, you know, kung fu movie where the lone ninja badass taking on, you know, 100 dudes. And whole thing in black and white. You don't even really see, the blood splatters, but it doesn't really impact you until, and then it goes from black and white to color, and the whole place is freaking painted red.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that was a very intense scene. I wonder how many gallons of freaking blood they had to use for
and
that.
Then just like cutting the top off of Lucy Liu's head. Yeah. But yeah, they don't even mention her name until the second movie. Like, you know, we go through that whole first movie, and they even bleep out when someone says her name. You don't know who she is until the second movie, and we get a little bit more of her backstory, and you learn, you know, how she joined the squad and learned to fight and learned the sword and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's just cool. I don't know. It's crazy about the freaking bodyguard squad. Schoolgirl too. That's just like
Uh-huh. Yeah, and Quentin said that that character of the bride is something him and Uma Thurman came up with during Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I mean, the whole scalping scene was pretty intense as well. So.
Yeah, but that that second film, when you finally... I don't even think you get to see Bill other than his voice until that second movie. And, yeah, David Carradine, Mr. Kung Fu himself. Yeah, how many Hanzo swords has that movie sold?
Hundreds? Thousands?
Yeah, every truck stop knife shop I've seen, there's a freaking Kill Bill sword in the knife case.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's awesome, you know, when she travels to Okinawa to, you know, try to learn the, you know, swordsman artship, and he's like, you know, no, I'm out of the game, and then she tells him, well, I'm going after Bill, and he's like, all right, I'll help you now.
Yeah. That's cool, because the guy who played Hanzo, remember who he is? No. Sonny Chiba.
Ah,
one of like the original, like, you know, big kung fu actors. So that's more legitimizes his homage to kung fu movies. Having Sonny play a character in there.
That's awesome. I did not pick up on that for some reason.
Yeah, it's like I really didn't. I don't think I noticed it the first time until I went back and was looking at some of the credits and stuff.
So, do we dare venture on to Kill Bill Volume 2?
That's what we were just talking about.
No, I thought we talked about one.
Damn yeah, but it. the whole Sonny Chiba and stuff is in the second one.
Oh, it was also in the first one too.
But she doesn't get the sword until the second movie. Like, you see her like show up and like, you know.
No, she just gets the training. Yeah, but well, she doesn't.
Well, she has the sword when she goes to fight Lucy Liu's character, but you don't see her getting the sword until the second movie when we start getting more into her backstory and stuff. And like I said, everything's kind of filmed out of order, like Quentin Tarantino always does. But yeah, the scenes with her on the mountain with the kung fu long beard kung fu master. Oh yeah, that's straight up old school kung fu movie.
Yeah, it's so crazy to try to podcast and talk Quentin Tarantino and try to. How he keeps the thought processes, the timelines, and everything else straight. I mean, I'm not even trying to direct, you know, many hours of these movies, and I have a hard time, you know, keeping track of time frames and characters.
Or if he shoots it in order and then just mixes it up in post.
That wouldn't surprise me.
And some of his more modern movies, his World War II movie.
And Glorious Bastards.
Glorious Bastards with Mr. Brad Pitt. Yeah, that was a weird movie too, because it's Brad Pitt, who is like really really southern, like Texas draw, and this movie is leading a squad of Jewish soldiers that are trying to get some, like, you know, revenge on the Nazis. And it's their alternate history, because I think they do kill Hitler in the movie. But yeah, Brad Pitt is just hilarious. he tries to play like an Italian director or something like that, but he has this thick southern accent. Buongiorno.
That's probably what it would sound like if I tried to speak French.
Oh, yeah, that one, that's, was it 2009 that one came out?
Yeah, which is crazy, you know, doing some of my research and everything. Did you know he actually started development for this film in 1998?
Huh. Yeah, I think it was supposed to have been like, it was supposed to happen before Kill Bill, or he had the idea for it, and then he decided to
hold off, moved on, and, you know, did the two-part Kill Bill, and then after directing Death Proof, he returned to work on the film, and... You know, it actually...
It made like $320 million, something like that. So yeah, it's probably one of his, not his biggest movie, but his... You know,
and I mean, dude, it grossed over $321 million and cost $75 million in production budget. So, I mean, I'd say that's a pretty hefty return on investment.
Yeah. And his last movie that he has done, Django from 2012, that was his biggest movie at $425 million.
Yeah. So do we dare get into Django?
Yeah, let's unchain Django.
I think Django's already been unchained, and I'm sorry, but if you fucked with Django, I feel highly bad for you, because...
See, I was kind of disappointed because I thought it was going to be a spinoff movie about Django Fett.
Well, I mean, Are you sure that, you know, both Django's are spelled the same? I mean, we know in Django Unchained that the D is silent.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was not a Fett movie. But yeah, Jamie Foxx, this was Quentin's first attempt at a Western. And his supposed last movie, The Hateful Eight, is going to be another Western. But yeah, Jamie Foxx is like the ex-slave turned bounty hunter. It's just a badass.
Yeah, I mean, you got, you know, Jamie Foxx.
And his partner, Christoph Waltz, which was
Dr. Schultz.
Yeah, he was the badass and one of the main bad guys in Inglourious Basterds. And he was just so freaking evil in that movie. And in this movie, he's the good guy. You really like his character and how he's kind of helping Django to become a badass and they really become partners through the course of the movie.
I mean, they made a badass duo. And I liked how they tied the whole storyline together and everything. I mean, you know, it is a very dark, you know, subject matter, and there was a lot of, you know, brutal violence. I mean, this is probably one of the more, you know, violent Tarantino films, which, I don't know, I guess anytime
it's
you're talking about...
It's probably his bloodiest, I think, so far, especially like the finals... The final scenes when he's finally getting
thing,
his vengeance.
You know, for me was, you know, when the freaking dog, you know, attacking that guy, you know, essentially, like, it's like, holy shit, you know, I mean, that...
And he just kind of, you know,
And I guess part of it, too, knowing that, hey, this is based on actual history, that, you know, this shit did happen to people,
Leonardo DiCaprio's character, too, is just a douchebag.
Yeah, about the whole Mandingo fighters.
Yeah.
Him and his little prissy...
and his head guy, Samuel Jackson, yet again.
Jeez,
Samuel Jackson is such an asshole in this movie.
I mean, dude, I think Samuel L. Jackson was harsher than any of the slave traders themselves, you know? I mean, just...
One of the few movies where Sam doesn't make it.
No, he definitely did not make it.
I mean, that was worse than the shark in Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
that movie was. I mean, it was probably his bloodiest and most violent, but it's a good movie. Well, let's talk about as we're kind of running toward the end of our time here, some of the stuff that Quentin has done as an actor and a writer because he's always been big partners with Robert Rodriguez.
Yep,
and he appeared in Desperado.
Yep, and then you know you also had he wrote the script for Rodriguez's film From Dusk Till Dawn. So.
No, that was actually Quentin.
Quentin wrote it.
He wrote it, but he didn't direct this one.
Yeah,
Rodriguez. I don't think Rodriguez directed this one either. I can't remember the director of Dusk Till Dawn, but yeah, it was kind of shot at the same time as Desperado because you see the same characters in like both movies. It was kind of like, hey, we're in Mexico already. Why don't we just go ahead and film both these movies while we're here? You see Danny Trejo's in both of them, Cheech is in both of them, Selma Hayek's in both of them.
Which is funny because digging up the old vinyls, we do have a freaking Cheech and Chong record on vinyl. So.
Yeah. Freaking Cheech is hilarious in Dusk Till Dawn because he plays like three different characters. He plays the border patrol agent. He plays the one of the vampires at the titty twister bar in whorehouse, and then he also plays the big mobster that they're going to meet in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just awesome the correlation between freaking Desperado and Dusk Till Dawn, where you got the freaking cock pistol. I mean,
yes,
badass.
Freaking Tom Savini, special effects extraordinaire, plays a biker called Sex Machine, and he has the Dugan gun that you see in Desperado. Yeah, that movie is weird, too, because it was George Clooney and Tarantino, and again, it starts with one of those weird openings that you have no idea what the movie's about until 30 minutes in, and they're fleeing to Mexico to meet up with this gangster that's going to let them live protected in his town, but they got to wait till the morning, so they decide to hang out in this bar. It turns out to be a trap. It's a strip club run by vampires.
I'm going to go ahead and preface, folks. If you're in the middle of the desert and you run across a bar, some things in life are just too good to be true. So one or two things. You better hope to hell that's a mirage, or you probably want to turn back and go the opposite way, even if it does mean you're going to die of dehydration in a desert.
Unless it's an Applebee's or something you know nothing's going to happen in, do not go in the random biker bar. If you see Danny Trejo and Cheech behind the bar, leave right then. There's freaking vampires.
I mean, those are two guys that I would love to sit down and have a beer with, but I'm going to make sure it's not in the middle of a desert.
Yeah. Even that the band in the bars of vampires. That's cool. Like when everybody starts turning into vampires trying to eat the customers, the band are playing instruments made out of bodies and stuff. Yes. And oh yeah, back to Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, Harvey Keitel is the they kidnap a family to smuggle them into Mexico in their RV, and Harvey Keitel is the ex preacher whose car they hijack.
Yeah, it's just so funny. I mean, just all the different characters and the way they tie in together, you know, in different films and everything else. I mean, it's just awesome.
Oh, yeah, I like.
I guess that's one reason why with Tarantino, I guess he's got a good feel for how the actors are going to do and everything else. So, you know, why would you risk breaking something if it's not broken? And if you know that, hey, this cast of team's going to put out a good film,
yeah,
you know, just keep reusing them.
And I love Clooney's speech to Harvey Keitel, because Harvey Keitel's character is a preacher who's kind of lost his faith because his wife's died. And he's like, so are you a faithless preacher or a mean motherfucking servant of God? And Harvey Keitel's like, I'm a mean servant of God. He doesn't want to say the words. Oh, and whatever. One thing I talked to, Quentin also wrote the original script to Natural Born Killers.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much, because I think he didn't have anything to do with it after that original script, and it was, you know, changed here and there. So I don't know how much of his original story made it into the movie, but he got, you know, story writing credit on that movie. And that's another one that's kind of, you can kind of see, that's a weird movie. So it would not surprise me if a lot of Tarantino stuff made it in.
Well, I mean, and I'm looking here, you know, so apparently Tarantino co-wrote and directed Grave Danger, the fifth season finale of CSI.
Yeah, he's done a lot of TV writing,
and is actually nominated for
a
Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Directing of a Drama Series. So, I mean, dude, this guy's been all over the place.
Yeah. Maybe he should direct the next Star Wars movie.
I mean, we got to see how that plays out. I mean, if he directs Star Wars, everybody's dead. You know, You know what happens? I can go ahead and tell you. Somebody's going to screw up somehow. The Force is going to implode, and everything that we know about Star Wars is now gone.
I just want to see Samuel Jackson, because they're supposed to be doing a Mace Windu movie. I just want to see Samuel Jackson going, like, what does Yoda look like? Does Yoda look like a bitch?
A bitch he does not look.
Pass me my lightsaber. It's the one that says bad motherfucker.
In the first R-rated Star Wars edition.
And you will know my name is Mace Windu when I strike down upon you.
All right. I'm sure we probably got some, you know, people that are good at video production listening to the podcast. Yeah. If you can make a fan film,
I want to see Pulp Star Wars. Well, I got about wraps us up here. Any final thoughts on Tarantino?
Yeah, go watch everything Tarantino and learn about him and listen to this podcast.
Yeah, when Hateful Eight comes out, we'll have to do a movie review episode and update our podcast on Tarantino. Well, with that, folks, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
He's black.
Go on.
He's bald.
Does he look like a bitch?
What?
Does he look like a bitch?
No!
Then why you try to fuck him like a bitch, Brett?
He didn't.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did, Brett. You tried to fuck him. No. And my son, no. Wallace don't like to be fucked by anybody except Mrs. Wallace. You read the Bible, Brett.
Yes.
Well, there's this passage I got memorized. Sort of fits this occasion. Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. and I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for some Beer 30. What are we drinking today, Brad?
Today we are drinking the Bourbon Barrel Quad by Boulevard Brewing out of Kansas City. This is a KC. Special limited release L, and this is part of the Smokestack series. And this is a hard hitter, folks. This one's pushing 11.8% ABV. So,
If we're our words are slurred later when we're doing the science segment, you'll know why. Because this is probably the strongest beer we've sampled on the podcast.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, as far as taste and quality and everything else goes, folks, once again, I can't stress enough. This beer right here, you know, you want to serve it at about, you know, 54 to 57 degrees. So if you've got a wine cooler or, you know, just a single bottle wine chiller, go ahead and throw it in there. Don't set it in the refrigerator or the, you know.
Forget about it like we did last week and almost made beer slushies.
Yeah. and also chalice.
Yeah,
that's the preferred glassware.
That's one of the ones they recommend. And this is like I said, this is going to be a Belgian strong ale. It's basically their version of an Abbey style quadruple, which these are actually aged in oak bourbon barrels. And also it says they age it up varying lengths up to 3 years on this, and they add cherries to make up the Angel Share, which is beer that evaporates during
the aging. Barrel aging process.
The beer, they say the beer retains, you know, very subtle cherry characteristics with toffee and vanilla notes, and that's going to come from your aging in your bourbon barrels. It definitely has a nice kind of whiskey flavor to it, too. I mean, you can definitely taste the bourbon
flavors. You know, you get that alcohol taste to it. I mean, beers like this is originally what got me into craft beers.
Yeah.
You know, before I was more, you know, Hennessy, whiskey, you know, just maybe a Coke and rum was about as far as a mixed drink I would come to. And when I say rum, I'm talking 151. what some folks would dub jet fuel.
Yeah, no, dude. Aged rum is the way to go. 151 is just if you want to hate yourself in the morning.
You know what, though? I've never woke up feeling bad after a night of 151.
I sure as hell have.
Well, my friend, you did it wrong.
too much sugar for me. Yeah, give me some Ron Zapaca and we're straight. Yeah, this is where I said this is like a pretty like a high content beer. So it's more it's almost leaning into the barley wine area, but you really don't get that strong alcohol flavor that you get with a barley wine. This still tastes like a bourbon barrel beer.
Yeah, I mean you definitely get, you know, at the first. I mean, my stomach starts to warm up a little bit. It, you know, the beer we've already touched tastes boozy. It's, you know, you taste the toasted malts and everything in there. And then on the end, you get, you know, almost a wine characteristic,
yeah.
You know, where it just subtle tries to dry out your mouth just a little bit. But then you get a hint of that cherry that's in there. And, dude,
we need to go take that class. I remember what they call it, but it's kind of like a sommelier for wine. They have a version of that for beer drinkers that, you know, where you can like talk, you know, learn all the flavors,
yeah,
and
I mean,
all that stuff.
You know, unfortunately, folks, I drink beer to enjoy beer. I don't know all of the lingo.
We don't necessarily
and,
want to have to study it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not looking to freaking break out, you know, the beer connoisseurs, you know, directory to everything, you know, craft beer and beer related. So, you know, for you folks that, you know, are more in tune to that stuff and you want to, you know, see the, you know, gravity plateau, the terminal gravity, you know, and everything else, go and look up boulevard.com.
And as always, there's a link in our show notes.
Yeah. Or you go to our website. I mean, freaking use Google, use our website. We'll point you in the direction. So
quick,
that
folks,
way
to the Google. Oh, yeah, this is, like I said, I'm really enjoying this beer, and it's, whatever, a 26 IBUs, so it's not super bitter, but it's difficult, you know, starting to creep up there. But yeah, it's smooth. I'm enjoying it. And
it's one that if you're out and about that you happen to find, I mean, one thing, you know, I know so much of craft beer, everything's done in small batches, which is why we love craft beer to begin with, is because it's, you know, as Sweetwater would say, don't float the mainstream.
But we need one of those big Sweetwater signs on the wall down here.
Bought that actually has an official batch number and everything. Yeah,
it's almost like a bottle of, like a single barrel whiskey, where you have that that serial number on it. One word of warning, folks: a little safety warning here. These bottles only come in the 750 milliliter bottles with the cork, like you see on a champagne bottle. And that thing, you might think, hey, beer is not going to have the pressure a champagne bottle will. Hell no. That thing will launch when you open it. So watch your eyes, folks.
Anything with carbonated pressure and a cork, yeah. If you aim it at your face.
We almost shot the dog. It was. It gets a little dangerous when you open these.
No, I mean, I shot it toward the ceiling because I knew what was going to happen. I've opened enough.
Well, our first beer that had a cork in it, we're like, this is not going to pop like a champagne, and then bing, freaking bouncing off the walls.
Yeah,
and
we
stuff.
Nearly took out a light fixture with that one. All right, yeah. I mean, so, beginners. Like said,
so if you've never had a beer with a cork in it, like I said, just be warned. It's got some pressure behind it.
That, or if your friend's standing about 35, 40 feet away and you want to give them a nice startle, then, you know, at that point, all odds are off.
Duck and cover, people. Duck and cover. All right, that wraps us up on the Beer 30. We'll be right back with some science.
Stay tuned.
And we're back. It's time for some science. Dropping bombs.
Dropping bombs like we drop knowledge.
Yeah. Are you ready for some knowledge, Brad?
Well, hold on. You actually asked me the question this time? You don't think after all the previous science segments and everything that I'm not already like...
Hey, I didn't ask you last week, so I was like, yeah, maybe a week off, you finally were ready for some knowledge.
Well, all right. I guess we can get into it. I'm ready.
All right. First off... I've made several predictions on this podcast about our robot overlords destroying humanity, and y'all have called me paranoid. I'm just going to say. But now...
Hold on. Wait. I've called you paranoid. Who is this y'all you speak of?
Them.
Them.
Yes.
I see now.
The Illuminati, or you know, whoever is responsible for the Skynet becoming active and killing us all. Well, now it turns out... I'm not wrong. There's like actual smart people that are starting to agree with me, folks. So watch it with your Roombas taking over and like, you know, eating your cat or whatever. Stephen Hawking's recently announced that in an interview that he thought artificial intelligence could end humanity.
I mean, I say that's a very true statement there. And, you know, it's just kind of ironic, if you will, just because... This is going to tie into a later segment, folks. So what I want you to see here is we're bringing the podcast full circle.
the freaking Rise of the Machines or whatnot. Yeah, Hawking's recently upgraded his voice system. A company, can't find the name, SwiftKey, has made a new system for him that actually uses some AI that kind of predicts his... the way he talks and stuff, and will suggest words for him and make it a little bit easier for him to talk in his robot voice. But someone asked him during this interview about his new system, like, you know, what he thought of the development of artificial intelligence. And his exact quote is, "The development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race."
I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, we see more and more as technology progresses that it oftentimes, yes, does make life more convenient and everything, but at the same time, there always seems to be further setbacks. I mean, let's just take basic computer systems, right? I mean, it's great. Everything's all digital, and you don't have a bunch of paper trails, and we're not out, you know, having to kill just groves of trees and everything to make paper. But at the same time, what comes with that? You know, you see your hacker groups like Anonymous and, you know, some of these other people that, you know, take that digital information, learn how to manipulate and hack into it. And before long, bam, now, you know, identity threat is the biggest growing, threat to most people in their daily lives.
Well, not only that, look how dependent you are on your phone now. I mean, do you know anybody's phone number by heart other than 911?
Wait, what's the number for that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're so dependent on having... We don't have to remember that stuff now because the knowledge is already in our phone. And these phones have become like an extra brain for us. Like, we don't have to memorize stuff because, hey, it's all at the touch of my fingers here. So, I mean, if we become... The more dependent we become on artificial intelligence to do stuff for us, it's going to end up like whatever that Wall-E movie where humans are just kind of like these fat creatures watching TV all day and the robots are doing all the work for us. And if they decide to go evil
hey, I'm okay.
on us, we're screwed.
I'm okay with that. You know what? I can be fat. I can drink beer. I can smoke cigars. As long as I can successfully podcast, we're good.
Well, that's like Avengers coming up, Age of Ultron. Yeah. If computers start...
Hell Hydra.
Yeah. If computers start doing all our thinking for it, like, sure, you're... That's the problem with being human, you have, a conscience and a moral center where
you
can be like...
You think I really have one of those?
Maybe. It's small, yeah, but everyone has them. So, but something that thinks completely on logic alone, they're like, hey, I need to do something about the Earth's pollution level. The simplest way to do that would be to kill all the humans. A human person is going to be like, no, that's a bad idea. But robots, we get freaking Skynet and Terminator.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will say going back to that, thing is, as far as humans are concerned, there's a lot of people out there that will say, we are the biggest form of parasite, that we are nothing more than a virus to this planet. So,
yeah, I mean, so if robot...
Are we our own worst enemy, and are we damning ourselves to, destroy the Earth via, these breakthroughs in technology and everything? One has to ponder.
Yeah, Hawking's actually wrote opinion article for a paper with, it was him, two well-known physicists, Max Tegmark and Frank Wilczek of MIT, and a computer scientist, Stuart Russell of University of California. And one of the things they said in this paper was the development of AI could be the biggest event in human history, but it could also be the last. And so
we have it, the rise of the machines, and it's the Terminator all over again.
Yeah. I mean, Elon Musk, who is pretty much our real life Tony Stark, he's a freaking billionaire futurist who he's the one behind SpaceX civilian space flight programs. And he recently said in an interview, or he tweeted, that creation of AI could be like unleashing the beast. I mean, so all these guys that are way smarter than me are starting to agree with my paranoid opinions of robots killing us all. And that scares the shit out of me, folks.
Dude, we're cigar nerds. We are born to be fearless.
But then the robots can fight the zombies. So, I mean...
I see it in my own personal life. Oftentimes I'm challenged. What is the lesser of the two evils? And, this is just another
robots
lead in.
Robots or zombies?
Yeah.
Have you seen, was it Microsoft recently made these like security robots for some of their facilities? And they kind of look like Daleks. I mean, supposedly they're just like basically walking cameras that can record crime and call the cops, but... They look just a little bit creepy. I mean, they look like freaking these giant white Daleks running around. If they start saying exterminate, I'm out, dude. I'm moving to the middle of the woods.
The Daleks are pretty bad. I mean, here I'm more, I think, concerned about Cybermen. I mean.
Delete.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just crazy to see. With technologies, I guess there's good and then there's bad. I mean, oftentimes I feel like... Just as a whole, we often become lazy, we become dependent, and I just see this as another avenue to give people a scapegoat to not have to go out and figure information out for themselves or, learn knowledge and just say that, oh, well, I was told by so-and-so, so I'm just going to take it with a grain of salt and never question. Yeah. That point, I think that's when humanity has reached its demise.
Well, let's get on to something else.
And that's
else
a big
here.
F you to the politicians out in the world, too.
Dude, you're getting more paranoid than I am, and that's saying a lot. Let's move on to our next article, also semi-robotic related. Researchers have unearthed an ancient computer from, the Greeks.
Yeah, and here, folks, I mean, this is back even before the days and vacuum tubes and everything. And for you folks that are up on modern technology, I mean, I can remember... you know, back in the days where computer systems and everything, I mean, it used to take, you know, an entire house of tubes and everything else in order to calculate even the simplest of equations. So, you know, with microprocessors and everything, I apologize from the previous Beer 30 segment, we warned you that things may get a little bit slurred and construed during this segment. So you're yeah, seeing that in action.
Yeah, apparently I found this thing. They call it the Antikythera, however you pronounce that, mechanism. It was pulled off a shipwreck that was discovered in 1901 off the coast of Greece.
So what is this, man? We're finding bottles of booze on shipwrecks. Now we're finding,
there's a lot
like...
of cool stuff coming out of Greece, man. Yeah, but this item that was found in 1901, they've recently done some more research on it with James Evans of the University of Puget Sound and Christian Carman, history of science professor at the University of Quilmes, Argentina, says this thing dates back to 250 BC, and it's a way earlier example of complex machine than we've seen before.
Yeah, I mean, this is making things, you know, 50 to 100 years older than previously thought. So, you know, it's just crazy. I mean, folks, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's probably aliens.
You need that weird hair from that guy from Ancient Aliens on History Channel.
Hey, have you seen my head, dude? It cannot grow hair.
Let's get you a wig, dude, so you can, when you say it's aliens, you can look like that guy. Yeah, like I said, that's one thing interesting, too, is like they were building these complex machines, and they think they're not really sure what it was for. They think it predicts like
solar eclipses
and stuff like that. But you know, if they had this stuff way back when in Greece, imagine what we would have now if we hadn't lost that technology and, like, you know, the Dark Ages and all that. You know, we could be doing some serious X-Wing shit right now if we hadn't lost this knowledge back in the
day. Dude, I mean, we're already doing some pretty serious X-Wing shit. So, all right. I mean, I don't even want you to question that.
I mean, those racing drones we found, those things were badass.
But, I mean, I just want to throw this out there. With all the advances in technology and everything else, I don't think it's just you and I that are looking to get back into the retro game culture and to get away from some more modern technology. So, you know, is it programmed into our subconscious that we feel like something amiss may be happening here? That
we're just getting old, man. We want to relive our childhood, tell these kids to get off our lawn. We're playing some Nintendo and some Atari, dude. Leave
us alone.
You
better not be whacking in my tool shed either.
You got to build a tool shed first. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. And another some more science here. Now, do you people stay up all night researching weird stuff like we do? Or are you the guy that gets up at like 8 in the morning and is all super poppy?
Hell no,
poppy
not
8
in the morning, dude. These people are up at like 5 a.m., like ready to hit the ground running and shit. Like,
yeah.
I mean, they're the people I look at the gym and everything. Like, how are you not a zombie? Because I definitely feel like a zombie.
I'm going to bed when these people are getting up. And it just, but yeah, there's a study now from the ASAP Science YouTube channel about early birds versus night owls. Like, what actually effect does that have on your personality? How you sleep actually predicts what kind of personality you have. And these early bird people, they're more social, more positively social, less likely to experience depression or addiction to alcohol and tobacco. And we know that's not us.
I mean, by no means am I addicted to nicotine or alcohol, but I will say that I do indulge in the life. And, you know, I mean, like these things.
I'm a grumpy hermit, you know. I'm definitely not a
grumpy hermit.
I'm definitely not the early bird.
Well, I mean, I got to say, going back to one of our previous science segments, I mean, that's just another reason, because of alcohol and nicotine, we're much happier people overall. I mean...
Yeah, and these, like I said, studies of the brains of people that are night owls, they're determined that there's less white matter, which actually makes it where there's fewer pathways for the hormones like serotonin and dopamine that makes people feel good to travel through your brain, so you're not getting, as like I said, the more happy, positive
people. You know, on the counter side to that, you know, the people that are more the night owls and everything, you know, they're also much more, you know, creative, and they also have cognitive abilities. And, you know, are known to be more of the risk takers. So, you know, if you're in...
And that definitely describes us. Yeah, I mean, that's one reason we started a podcast. We're like, man, we got to do something creative, but I can't draw or paint.
Without risk takers, you wouldn't have the venture capitalist out there, you know, funding so many of the great advances and everything else. So, I mean, I think overall, you know, it takes both types of people to come full circle and to see a project from start to finish.
So if happy morning people piss you off, you're probably a night owl like us. And yeah, like I said, I know a lot of artsy guys that that you know that do more physically creative stuff like you know paint and write and all.
I
think every one of these guys I know are night people. You know, they're up you know all night nearly working on these projects of theirs. And
I mean, I think part of that creates a free thinker. So, you know, whereas you might be happy and bubbly and just go along with the social norms, you know, it takes a counterpart to learn to question, ask the whys of the world and get to, you know, some of the bigger, better understandings and not just take everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I've been a night owl forever. And I find, too, that there's less distractions being, you know, there's more time to invest in deep thoughts or study topics or create stuff if you're doing it 2 a.m. where you're not getting phone calls and there's errands and stuff you've got to run. I mean,
you know, that's the time that typically I'm getting away from technology. That may be when I'm sitting down reading a book, looking to try to expand my knowledge and, you know, learn about other traits of the world and everything. So, I mean, once again, I think it takes, you know, a whole host of different people and mindsets and everything to make the world turn and to, you know, as a society, you know, learn how to live amongst ourselves and learn how to grow and, you know, develop into, you know, something more than just, hey, it's because the computer said so.
Yeah, I could handle having a regular daytime lifestyle. It's just, I definitely see some truth to this study because... Yeah,
there's definitely a lot less drama at night too.
Yeah, because I said, everybody know that's creative or are zombies like we are that you know only sleep when the sun comes up. So yeah, let us know what you think of this on our Facebook page and whatnot. We'll be right back with some nerd news.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
And welcome back, folks, to the Nerd News segment. Today, we've got some new stuff to talk about.
Oh, shit. Actual news?
Yeah, I know. You know, there's been hints of a few great movies being released, so we're going to give our feedback on the trailers that we've seen so far.
Yeah, it's definitely been trailer time. And the thing is, all this stuff is like probably coming out this time next year. So by next year, we're like, remember like a year ago when we talked about these trailers? And like, boy, were we wrong. This stuff all sucked.
I think you probably, once we get into the movies, just offended everybody that is ever going to listen to our podcast ever. Congratulations, Joe.
Hey, remember how excited you were for episode 1 and then how disappointed you were afterward?
Don't remind me.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's early, folks. I mean, so far, what's our first step?
Yeah, I'm just going to give a quick outline. So today what we're going to talk about is Star Wars A New Hope. Terminator Genesis.
It's Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Where the hell did I get A New Hope from?
I don't know.
I'm already working on the next after The Force Awakens, so once
Star Wars 7, The New Hope that this won't suck.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's still early. Just to give you folks a heads up, I woke up approximately about an hour ago when Joe sent me a text like, hey, I'm grabbing food and I'm showing up at your house to record. Probably shouldn't have stayed up to 5 a.m. Damn it, Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Next on the list, we got Jurassic World and then Spectre, James Bond. Little tease there. So let's jump right into it now. Star Wars, The Force Awakens. For all you politically correct folks out there.
Or as Kevin Smith said, The Force Awakens and then quietly tries to tug one out before his wife wakes up. That cracked me up so bad when I saw it.
So, Joe, you being the Star Wars historian and the expert here, I'm going to let you take the lead. Your thoughts on the trailer, sir?
Let's start with the good. I mean, I'm optimistic about it. I mean, the first the first thing we see is the new designs of the stormtroopers. Well, the first thing we see is like the helmetless stormtrooper that looks like he's just seen something and scared the shit out of him that we have no idea what he's looking at. He's like, oh.
Dude, he's in the desert. I saw that very same desert in Tremors.
Every time I see that scene, though, it reminds me of the stormtroopers from Spaceballs, where like the two black stormtroopers are like combing the desert with an afro pick and like, we ain't found shit. For some reason, that's like the first thought I had when I saw that.
And it just so happens, I got in a conversation last night at the comic book shop with a guy over Spaceballs. So... small world after all.
Yeah, I mean, that scene was like, the internet's been like all controversial. Why is there a black stormtrooper? The stormtroopers are all clones of Jango. I'm like, no, they're not, you idiots. Read some freaking books. Do your research. Freaking the clone troopers were clones. The stormtroopers are people that they have like enlisted after the clones all died off because they were like a short term. They only had like a 5-6 year lifespan. There's no more clones. These are actual people under the armor. You just never see their heads. So it could be even alien stormtroopers. Yeah, we don't know. So it's like our first stormtrooper we see. Yeah.
Whoa. Star Wars versus aliens.
At this point, we don't even know if he is a stormtrooper.
Who knows? I mean, all you're seeing is a...
From the first movie, fourth movie. But yeah, them dressing up as stormtroopers to sneak into to the Death Star. So, you know...
I mean, you might just be looking at a Trojan horse right there, yeah. Folks. You don't even know.
The thing is, we don't know a whole... That was the only disappointing thing about the trailer, is we don't know a whole lot. We didn't see any of the principal cast, like the main original cast. We've all seen just like a droid that looks like a soccer ball and some girl on a flying domo and this stormtrooper guy. So we really don't even know what we're dealing with at this point. The part that I was like, oh my, the only oh my god moment I had in that was when you finally see the Falcon doing some like dogfighting.
Yeah,
because you know
just
the,
like the you old, always old hear stuff the stories.
We've read the stories, and the old stuff has been limited by the technology of the time, so you didn't really get to see like Top Gun, like a good badass like dogfight with the Falcon. And now like we're like, oh shit.
So, your thoughts on the new lightsaber design and everything? What did you?
I got mixed feelings. When I first saw it, I was like, "Dude's gonna lose a wrist." And it's just, and I mean, there's like I said, I got into a deep nerdy conversation the other night at the comic book store about the pros and cons of the tri-blade.
You get into a deep nerdy conversation? Yeah, right. Don't lie.
But like I said, when I first saw it, I'm like, it's just kind of impractical to have the blade that close. I mean, you're gonna cut your freaking wrist off. But then again, if you look at the fighting style, there's different fighting styles of lightsabers, and this character may use a more, you know, medieval style of fighting, like we saw in the first three movies, when you know Luke and or Obi-Wan and Vader, they were fighting almost like a medieval sword fighting, and then with the prequels, it was more of a Japanese samurai style. So this character may, you know, just use a different fighting style where that, you know, hand guard is not a hindrance. He's not going to be spinning the thing around like. Yeah, Obi-Wan in episode one.
I mean, so you would treat it more as a broadsword.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. I'll see that. So, you know.
And there's lightsaber-proof armor, so he may have, like, some kind of glove where he's not going to lose a wrist, you know, because we don't know. I mean, I'll wait and see the past final
That
judgment.
May not even be the real lightsaber. They may have just did that.
That may have been another, like, you know, people. Screw you guys.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll just have to... keep our eyes open, see what happens. So periodically here on Nerd News, as new information is released and we learn more, we will definitely keep you folks informed. Cause...
And since you're the Star Wars rookie, what were your thoughts on the trailers?
My thoughts are I'm a little bit scared, I guess. You know, I mean, I remember I took the advice of, you know, my friends and everything. I did not watch when I did my Star Wars marathon. I did not watch, you know, episode 1 through, you know, 6. I skipped. I did, you know, the originals, then I did episode 1, and, you know, I remember all the hype behind episode 1 and everything, and I gotta say, it took me like 4 times to get through that movie. I mean, part of the problem was the pain meds after my surgery and stuff, but, I mean, it was just... What am I watching here? It's so emo, like it just
it's a freaking kids movie.
Yeah, and so I really hope that things don't take that kind of a turn. You know, where you have such a huge falling, and you know, people excited.
Yeah, I mean, people are so fired up about this. It's almost going to be impossible to leave up. to the hype that it's already generated. Yeah,
and you know what? You know, a lot of people said, you know, some of the other companies Disney's taken over and things that, oh, it's going to turn, you know, childish and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they've actually done a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty hands-off with the Avengers, letting Marvel do what they do. So I'm optimistic they're going to leave.
You know, I mean, I'll say at this point we've seen...
If it's screwed up, it's going to be a JJ thing, not a Disney thing. I think they're going to let him do what he thinks he needs to do, and we're just going to, whether or not we're going to see if that works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I'll say in seeing 2 minutes of something, it's hard to make a full judgment, yeah. And who knows? For all we know, this isn't even... This could just
what,
all
you
be
not
a big
see
tease.
It? Yeah. I mean, we're going to see it regardless. So there's no,
at least once. You might not have the repeats. I mean,
it's way too early to debate the whether or not this is going to be a good thing. Well, what about Jurassic World? That was a new one, another one we got with Mr. Star-Lord himself as, you know, the Dino Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we've had some off the air conversations, and I'm still waiting on Dr. Grant to make an appearance. I don't know what it is.
I don't think
you know, seeing all the new casts and everything. To me, I mean, have these folks not seen or heard the stories of the previous Jurassic Parks? Like, shit's not gonna end well. You're going to get fucking eaten. And
that's
have
they,
scientists
yeah, like,
not learned,
not seen...
hey, we probably shouldn't experiment with dinosaur embryos and stuff, because every time we do, shit goes bad.
Or the normal dinosaurs are bad enough. Let's, like, genetically modify a dinosaur and see what happens. Yeah, that's no bueno.
And especially one that eats meat. Guess what, people? In the dinosaur's eyes, you are meat. Maybe we should focus on herbivores.
The cool thing about this, though, is this is the first time we've seen the park in operation. And all the other movies, it's either been like a prototype or the aftermath of the dinosaurs that were left behind. Or
yeah, I mean, this one to me feels like it's, you know, on part of the trailer you see the people with their tablets and iPhones. So to me, it really feels like it's kind of set more in present day.
Yeah. This is the first fully functioning Jurassic Park we've seen. It's always been them trying to build Jurassic Park and bad shit's happened. But now it's finally opened and... with the monorail and stuff, it looks like freaking Disney's version of Jurassic Park. Yeah. But and then shit goes bad. But kind of reminds me of...
But that's okay, folks. We know it's going to end well because we have Star-Lord.
Kind of reminds me, and I can't remember which. It's like Jaws, like 3 maybe, where they're at like SeaWorld. And Jaws is like eating people at SeaWorld. Just the look of it kind of reminded me of that movie, especially with the giant alligator. Like,
I don't
jumping
know. You know,
water.
I mean, once again, I'll go see it for the sake of seeing it. I guess kind of based on reviews. I don't know. I mean, I the first two Jurassic Parks, I went and did the theatrical experience. The third one, nah.
Yeah, like I saw the first two. I finally saw the third one on DVD or whatever. But yeah, but this one, I mean, this one looks pretty cool. So our other, speaking of blast from the past, Terminator Genesis. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, this one to me, there's so many time frames. I don't know if I'm in T2 that was set in T1 or
that's the thing.
What's going on here. Because my mind is frazzled.
The trailer has
I've
confused
seen.
Me. Because it looked like, it started off, I mean, it looked especially exactly like T1. But then all of a sudden, like, yeah, the whole, like, lead up to it, you know, he's, you know, now he's back in the 80s, and he's in the
sporting
goods
store
trying to get clothes.
He's not
going to
have an awesome mix, so fuck that guy.
and then the T2 shows up, you're like, what the fuck? And then Sarah Connor shows up, but she's, like, a badass now. She's not, like, I'm like, wait a minute, is this not a remake of the first movie? It got some serious, like, Doctor Who time flux shit going on that, like, confused the shit out of me at first. But it looks kind of
badass.
Shouldn't
the Terminator regenerate or something then? I mean, at least give us some kind of closure as to, hey, here's what happened. That guy's dead. This really happened. Pick up from here. Forget about that over there. Okay.
Well, that's the thing. It's like Arnold's... basically, they sent a Terminator back to kill Sarah Connor as a child, and now she's been raised by this Arnold Terminator. So she's already a badass. So when Reese shows up to save her, she's like, ends up saving his ass. I'm like, oh yeah, we already took care of that Terminator they sent after me. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? And that's why, you know, Arnold's old as shit now, is because he's been around for the last, you know, 20 years or so, and helping her prepare for the shit that's gonna happen. I did see the one part of that clip I thought was badass is when you see original 80s Arnold, you know, appear, and then old Arnold like comes out of the darkness. He's like, "I've been waiting for you."
Yes.
I was like, hell yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, just trying to keep all the timelines and everything else straight. I mean, you know, once again, I mean, as far as trailers go, I mean, there's so many trailers that I see. And then when you see the final movie production, you're just like, huh, that was not what I was anticipating at all. So,
yeah, it's almost a remake of T1 and T2. But, I'll see it. Even if it's not, you know, the original thing, it's got to be better than Rise of the Machine.
Anything's got to be better than Rise of the Machine.
Yeah, like I said, it's definitely a... I would have kind of liked to have seen a continuation of the last movie. Seeing more of the future war with adult John Connor and stuff. But, I mean, it's kind of cool. You know, we get, you know, Arnold back in the mix.
I've always liked Arnold in the movies and stuff. I mean, geez.
At least it's not a complete reboot, like, because every freaking movie coming out now is a reboot of something or another.
You know, I got to give Arnold props. I mean, he does have the Austrian Death Machine band, and every one of their songs is Terminator themed. So,
that's awesome.
I mean, anybody that has a, you know.
The dude has his own tank, and he's been on Epic Mealtime and cooked steak or something on the engine of his tank. I mean, Arnold really is the character from The Expendables.
Hats off to that guy.
I mean, Arnold completely lives up to his character. And we had one more movie announcement that's not a full trailer yet, but we finally got the release of the title and the cast of the new James Bond movie.
Spectre. Yay! Yes.
So this is kind of a throwback to Blofeld and some of the terrorist organizations that are Bond faced in the original movies.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have to go somewhere that serves alcohol to see this movie because for some reason, every time I watch a James Bond film, I just feel like I have to have a martini. And I would
have to go down to
martini no other time in my life. So
that was like one of the first alcoholic drinks I had when I turned 21. I was like, I've got to have a martini shaken, not stirred. It tasted like diesel fuel. It was not a pleasurable experience. Yeah, that one we have to go down to that movie grill and check that one out because... Yeah, I'm a huge James Bond fan. I want to get that freaking Blu-ray pack so bad. It's freaking expensive for 24 movies. But yeah, I like Daniel Craig as Bond. He's more of a they've gone back almost closer to the novels. There's not as much silliness or comedy as there was during like the Roger Moore days. This is more of the hardcore badass Bond that it was in the books.
The shit's got real at this point. Yeah. So
the shit has definitely gotten real. So yeah, definitely looking forward to.
We definitely got to find Bond on Nintendo 64.
Yes, we've gotten old school games here. We just like hooked up an Atari last week, and now Brad's acquired a original Nintendo 64. So if you know anybody who has a GoldenEye, copy of GoldenEye, send it our way. And
minus the $900 price tag for the certified player's edition.
Yeah. As long as it works, yeah, we don't care what condition.
We'll make it work, dude. A little rubbing alcohol, some Q-tips. We got this.
All right, well, that kind of wraps us up, I think. Any final thoughts on our movie trailers or our Quentin Tarantino spectacular we had?
Well, my final thoughts are end all, all the trailers are badass. Quentin Tarantino's a badass. This episode has been badass. Brought to you by the Cigar Nerds.
And with that, like I said, also shout out to Fire and Rescue Cigars, The Badge Cigars, Old Men Smoke Cigars.
A badass.
Yeah. And also, please come out and hang out with us on our live show that we announced earlier in the show. And by this time this goes up, it'll all the details and stuff will be on our Facebook page. So come out, watch us record, smoke a cigar with us. Talk
maybe
nerdy.
Maybe even have a beer or some wine.
There's a bar where we'll be recording, so... That'll be.
We might not even be able to record because it'll turn into a drunk cast. You never know. We're crazy.
A nice live beer 30. Check us out on the Cigar Nerds Facebook page, the Cigar Nerds website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. Check us out on Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. Also, check us out on the ESOpodcast.com network. And with that, we'll be back. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.